So what we're actually going to do now is we're going to continue the epic journey.
Yes.
Right? And where are we with volume two of the epic journey?
We are our heroic app developer. It was very tough to survive. We found that out, but there are strategies to be successful and to really drive home success and not just living it out, but actually being successful in the process. So let's talk about the crowd. Sometimes adoring, sometimes not, right? Because the crowd is basically your user base. And what you do in your application will determine whether or not you actually get a user base or not. And it also determines whether or not you can keep that user base. And it's really, really important to think about that. We got some statistics that we'll show you as well around how, you know, it's very, very difficult to get users to download your app, but beyond that, to keep them. And we'll get into that. But first, a little bit of a quiz. What do gladiators and apps have in common? Jonathan.
I'm going to be responsible right now for the Jeopardy music.
Do-do-do-do-do.
Okay. Because I haven't a clue.
Yeah.
But I bet you're going to tell us.
I am going to tell you right now. Apps live and die at the whim of the crowd.
Dum-dum-dum. Right?
So everybody's probably familiar with what a gladiator is, ancient Rome, all that kind of good stuff. Apps are kind of the same way as a gladiator, if you want to think about it in a whimsical way, because of the fact that apps are basically in the arena all the time, which is the App Store, and on the phones or on the tablets and things like that too. And whether or not they live or die will depend on whether the user, he or she, whatever it might be, likes the app or doesn't like the app. So it's really important to figure out exactly what you need to do to make sure that that application, or game for that matter, really drives home a really great experience. So
we have another good one for you on the
yes.
chat. Get this one. They both confront angry customers in the crowd.
They can. Absolutely.
That's
they
a
can.
Good one, actually.
Yes, I like it too. And I never thought of it that way, but that kind of makes sense.
Right?
Yeah, for sure.
Virtual crowd in this case.
Yeah.
Or device crowd or store crowd or whatever, but
yeah.
Nice
for
one.
Sure. Yeah, for sure. So let's talk about what you are facing as an app developer. Only one in four, 26%, 25%, whatever, right? Of all mobile app developers, or mobile apps are downloaded. Let's try that again. Only one in four apps that are downloaded are open more than once, right? So you've done a lot of work to try and drive home the fact that your application, you know, is worth downloading. So you've driven word of mouth, you've done some marketing and things like that, and we're stepping ahead a little bit, but you got the user to download the app and he or she is going to open it up, but only one in four actually decides that they're going to open it more than once. Those are really tough odds, right? So it's tough enough to get users to see your application and want to download it. It's even tough just to get them to open it often, right? So that real experience has to be right the first time. So just because a user wants to download your app doesn't mean that, you know, you're going to keep that user as a customer. Because if it's not awesome on first run, you've lost that customer forever. Okay, it's really, really important. Even if you revise your application down the road, the user may remember your application being maybe subpar before, right? And that's something you have to really think about when you're actually building your application. Quality is really, really important right from the get-go. You can't put out a crappy app, or game for that matter, and expect people to just download it and keep coming back, even if you revise it and make it even better down the road. Once you have the user, make sure you capture that user's imagination and capture that user's attention and never, ever let it go. Because if you let it go, if you provide an experience that's not appropriate or not immersive or fun enough for that user or productive enough for that user, he or she will not come back. That's unfortunately the way it is. So how do you do that? Make it as simple as possible for your user to love the app, right? So it sounds easy, right? You know, just a simple set of two sentences on this slide, but it's a lot tougher than you'd imagine, right? So you really have to think through the flow of your application. You really have to think through how your application's going to, you know, immerse the user in the software. So how are you actually grabbing the user's attention and never letting it go, right? Also, how do you remove the points of friction to that connection, right? So take a look at the number of taps or clicks or whatever it is that a user needs to do to get to a certain part of the app to do some sort of feature or something like that. If you remove some of that friction, it makes it easier for the user to stay with you on the application. So that's just one example. Another example is, you know, login, for example. A lot of applications today have some sort of login. You could build your own login information, but why not use federated sort of logins using, you know, Microsoft accounts or a Gmail account or a Yahoo ID, whatever it is that you got, you know, OpenID or OAuth or whatever it is. Federate that login, or maybe even Facebook, right? So that it's easy for a user to not have to think about another password and another username and all that kind of stuff. Now, that's not to say that that's the right answer for everything that you try to do, but unless you have a specific reason to create your own login functionality, I would suggest you use a federated sort of model. On Windows 8, Windows Phone, for example, in Windows Azure, we have a federated login sort of service that allows you to do all that stuff in the cloud and whatever else, which is a beautiful thing. Facebook has their own services as well that allow you to do all these types of things as well, Twitter even for that matter. Think about it, because they've got that security sort of figured out and they do it on a daily basis. You know, that's their bread and butter to keep their users' private information private. Might as well use that. That's just another example where that might be useful. Another example around friction is just building a user experience that is really, really great. And I'm going to talk about Health Pack Games. So Health Pack Games is a single-person shop out of Toronto that built a few games. And I'll get into this a little bit, just the background story, because I think it's a good story to tell. So Health Pack Games is a single guy. You know, he's a .NET developer. I don't remember. It's some sort of enterprise. He might be in one of the banks or insurance companies here in Toronto. But he's a .NET developer, and he loves the Microsoft platform. So when we came out with Windows Phone 7, he fell in love with it. And he was talking about it to all his friends and said, hey, look at this. This is great, you know, and everything else like that. And then he talked about the fact that, you know, I should build a game. It just seems like it'd be a lot of fun to try and build a game. So he kept on talking about it and talking about it. And I guess his coworkers finally got sick and tired of him talking about it and said, bet you can't build one in a weekend. So he did, right? So he built a game in a weekend. And that game became what you see on the screenshot here called Broken Wings. So it's still in the store today. This is a much more polished version than that weekend version that he created, but you know, you can sort of get the idea that, you know, he created this game, he had a great time doing it, and he's built a number of games since then. But he also made a lot of learnings from this, right? So he took a look at this game, and this is an example of the instructions for the actual game itself, right? So it tells you, you know, you fell from the top of the tree, avoid nests or whatever it is, and, you know, with a broken wing, jump back up, that kind of stuff. Okay, that kind of makes sense, right? But he found that while he was getting okay downloads from North American regions and from Britain, he wasn't getting it from the rest of the world, and he was trying to figure out why. And a lot of it he figured out was the fact that it wasn't regionalized. So he had this screen and it's English, but, you know, for example, he got a lot of feedback from users in Germany that said, you know, your app is great, your game is great, sorry, but it's kind of annoying to have to look at English all the time because I'd rather to see it in German. So he thought, oh, okay, well, that's pretty cool. I'll regionalize it and I'll pick a few markets that I think or languages that I think are worthwhile actually doing the translation, and he did that. And he saw his downloads, they went up a little bit further and everything, and that was good. But he really started taking a look at the mechanics of social games. And what I mean by social games, I'm talking about casual games in this case, right? And again, I'm going to use Angry Birds as the example. He took a look at why Angry Birds was so effective in getting everybody around the world to like their games and use those games and buy those games. And what ended up happening was he said, okay, yeah, okay, there's the addiction factor and all that, but let's talk about game mechanics. Let's talk about the flow of the game itself. And he noticed he's making a big mistake from the example that you see on the screen here compared to what Angry Birds was doing. He said, Angry Birds is making their instructions without any text at all. So that's kind of interesting. So he's revised over time. He's built a number of games since then. His latest game that is published is called Monster Stack 3HD. And this is the instruction page of Monster Stack 3D.
I love it.
Right? It sort of tells you, I mean, this is just a screenshot. There's animations to it, so you can't really tell from a single screen. But, you know, it tells you right away, you know, through just actions and verbal or whatever you want to call it, or just, you know, iconography, if you will, say the check mark and things, how to play the game. So it's really easy. That's removing a friction point for the user to actually download and love the game, right? Now, an interesting story around success stories around this is this guy has really done a great job at sort of figuring out who his market is and everything else like that. We're going to talk about him a little bit more in later, but he's making upwards of $80,000 a year on the set of games that he has. He's got an aggregate around 5 million plus downloads for his applications and games, which there are around 7 of them in the store today. And he's thinking about moving to Windows 8 now too. So, great success story, you know, moving from, you know, around 12 cents a day in ad revenue to Monster Stack 3D, a 3HD, I should say, which is, you know, making a lot of money for him, to be honest, using in-app purchase and advertising. So, you know, but it's removing the friction point to actually make the user want to play the game and actually provide value through removing friction points so that the user can say, you know what, it's worth buying this sort of level or whatever it is.
And that's actually even more important when you get talking about kids' games, mm-hmm. which, you know, you always tell me, like, you know, the most popular games in all the stores tend to be kids' games.
Yep.
But it just, it occurred to me when you put that image up of the instructions, iconography, all that kind of stuff. And then, of course, you mentioned know your audience, especially if you're building kids' games.
Yeah.
And, you know, here's the emotional connection. you know, you can't, I have a 2.5-year-old at home that loves the various different games on his phone.
Yeah.
And some of the things that always kills me is that you have these kids' games and then you go into the help or in the about or whatever, and then it's all text.
Yeah.
He can't read.
Exactly.
But with things like that, you know, and we'll relate this to something in a second, but with things like that, removing all those friction points, now when he loves it,
mm-hmm.
right, means I love it.
Yep.
If I love it, I'm going to tell everybody, guess what, free marketing.
Yeah.
Right? So one thing, of course, leads to another is really what I'm trying to say. And even with simple things like that, that may not, you may not even think has anything to do with today's topic or marketing, app marketing in general, or app success in general, it's actually specifically the opposite, where the small things yeah. are actually what matters and can make or break you.
Mm-hmm.
We did have a question on the chat as well in terms yes. of whether you can articulate it. I know obviously we can't articulate the exact numbers, but roughly around how many downloads?
Downloads for?
For the original game, Broken Wing.
I don't know, unfortunately. It's still on the store, so it's called Broken Wing Plus right now, I think is the name of it, so you can take a look at it. Health Pack Games is, you can search for all of his games on the Windows Phone Store today. I don't know. We are coming out with an actual formal case study on Health Pack Games down the road, so maybe keep your eyes open on wootstudio.ca or Canadian Developer Connection, and we'll
yeah.
see what we can do around that. But I don't want to even say, because I don't even know what the numbers are. But in aggregate, over his 7 games over the past 2 years, 5 million downloads. Not bad, right?
Yeah, and actually, so they're talking here about Rob made his first game in 8 hours mm-hmm. and has already gotten over 16,000 downloads.
Well done, Rob.
Yeah. Which is actually a great one. Another one has some crazy downloads too. Monster Stack. Monster Stack 2, that's the one you were talking about, no?
3.
Oh, okay. Yeah. But Monster Stack 2, according to the chat here, so obviously not an official number, but greater than 1.3 million.
So is the developer, is Michael online?
Don't know.
Very interesting.
But hey, if you don't know, I don't know.
Yeah.
Point being, that's actually, as much as all of these are case studies, and obviously, hey, we're talking about these apps, yeah. and just remember that everybody talks about apps.
Yes.
You know, and it's almost like free advertising at the end of the day. Word of mouth is very popular, both in the positive and the negative. So
yeah.
Be very, clever. It says it in the Windows Phone page description.
So there you go.
Anyway, point being, just remember how important it is to actually take the time to study other applications, see what it is that they're doing right, see what it is that they're potentially could be better, and then that's actually how you would actually do the stuff in your app.
Yep, exactly.
All right.
So.
Ooh, and I see another case study.
Let's do it. So this one's slightly different. This is, again, talking about, just to remind you, we're removing friction, right? So this is the story of a app on the Apple App Store called Bilingual Child. Now, Bilingual Child is basically an app that has a number of different books in different languages. And it's, as you can probably imagine from the title of the app, it's meant to, you know, teach a child how to speak a second language or something. And they do that by providing, you know, a series of books. And the interesting thing around this, and there you'll see a bit of the screenshot of the iPad app here, and then you also see a chart, and we'll talk about this chart. So what happened was the way the app itself is free, and you get one free book, and then after that, it's in-app purchase for other books. So they were doing okay. They were making decent sort of money and things like that on the application when they first brought it out. And they were actually quite happy with it, but they found that, you know, as you can see, the number of sales were, you know, below, you know, $50,000 and things like that, which was in each sort of month or whatever you want to call it, quarter. And they said, well, let's play around with this a little bit. So they actually decided to do something. And what they did was they said, okay, well, they were charging, I think it was like $1.99 for each additional book in-app purchase. And they said, what if we did a price adjustment and changed the books to $2.99 each? So that's what they did. And you can see a small dip sort of in the middle where where they actually made that change. But once that dip was done, they found they were actually making more money on less volume, okay? So that's a pricing strategy change that they did. That's not a remove all friction thing. But what they did find was, if you take a look at where they see, you see the added buy all button, they said one of the problems that we've had from feedback as well as talking to parents is that parents just they get frustrated because kids say, "Daddy, I want this. Daddy, I want this book. I want this book," and you buy one and then you buy another one. They said, what if we actually packaged all the books together and instead of charging like $35 for all the books that were there right now, maybe we charge $30. We give them a little bit of a discount or whatever it is, but you know, it basically makes it easier for the user, in this case a parent, to buy all the books all at once so that parent doesn't have to deal with daddy, daddy, may I, or mommy, mommy, may I. Or maybe not so polite in the case of some kids, but you get the point, right? So they removed the friction of buying the books instead of just creating a package saying, buy all the books. All they did was add this button called unlock all. And by adding that one button, take a look at their sales, right? So yes, they got a bump because they're charging like $30 for all these books together in one, but the volume increased dramatically as well because they removed the friction on how to buy in-app purchase. So something to think about because I think that's actually something very, very interesting.
So since you're already on the in-app purchases,
yes,
we do actually have a question. Mm-hmm. In terms of what is the smallest dollar amount allowed for an in-app purchase? And since you're already answering that,
yes,
ideally, any thoughts and suggestions in terms of actually how to go about looking at in-app purchases? Because obviously here you're talking about totally obviously in books and stuff like that. But you know, there's obviously different ways about going into in-app purchases, and are some types of in-app purchases better than others?
Yep, that's a good question. Now, for Windows and Windows Phone, I believe it's 99 cents.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Yeah, I don't
Alex
know.
Alex D says 99 cents
yeah.
also.
So
three's a quorum.
Yeah, there you go, right? So there's that. I'm pretty sure that's fairly similar on some of the other app stores like Google Play and the Apple App Store. Yeah. But I mean, it kind of makes sense, right? The $0.99 price point. Now, the interesting thing about in-app purchases is there's two types. There's consumables and there's durables. Basically, consumables are things that, you know, you buy it, and then you use it, and then it's gone, right? For example, if you're talking about a role-playing game, you know, like a bag of gold, would be a consumable, because you're buying a bag of gold in the game so that you can buy that sword, right? So maybe that bag of gold is like a consumable, because you pay $1.99 for 50 gold coins, and then, you know, you pay for items in the game with those gold coins.
Right.
A durable is something that once you buy, it's there for good. A good
sword.
A sword might be a good example there, right?
Or knowledge.
Yeah.
Nunchucks.
Exactly. Another good example in
What would be a good Taekwondo, or sorry, a Code Kwondo reference? What can we buy?
Mouse garrote. There you go.
Or a robe. Sensei's robe.
A sensei's robe.
I know there's an official name for it, and you guys will forgive me for not knowing the official
name. The kimono?
Is it?
Gi.
A gi.
Thank you, Tony.
See, and this is why we have him here in the studio, because he knows these things.
There you go.
Thank you, Tony. Yes.
So, those are good examples in a game context. And in a app context, for example, you had a
calculator with additional calculators.
Okay, so that's a good one, actually. Not the one I was going to mention, but I'll talk about this one because it's a good one. Calc Pro in both the Windows Store and the Windows Phone Store. And it's actually on iOS as well. I don't know about Google. Panoramic Software out of Vancouver actually built it. It's one of the best calculators I've ever seen. They charge, like on Windows Phone Store, you can buy the whole thing for like $8. So it's $7.99. Or you can buy, you get the standard calculator for free. I think you get the standard and scientific calculator. And then an in-app purchase for financial calculator or a unit converter or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And those are durables because you buy it in-app purchase, and then you get it forever at that point. So that's a good example. Another good example from an app context is, say, for example, you are doing something with content, so a magazine. So a magazine subscription would be a consumable because it runs out after a while. Whereas maybe you buy an article, and an article is a durable, so you always have that.
Just do yourself a favor and don't charge per page.
Yeah.
Because that's probably going to be like one of those immediate uninstalls.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Right?
Like,
right.
Who wants to deal with every time you want to read something new?
Yeah.
Which, again, remember, going back to Paul's original point about friction,
yeah,
it's those little things that you wouldn't necessarily think of, mm-hmm, but can totally destroy the entire effort.
Yeah, exactly, right? And again, talking about point of friction, even on the calculator idea, right? Getting a user to see the value of the application by adding, you know, like a trial-based or a free version that has the standard and scientific calculators. They see the value in the application. Maybe they need a graphical component to it. And then that's an in-app purchase. But, you know, you've removed the friction of them to have to buy the application even. So that's another example of removing friction. A little bit different than what we talked about in the other two, but it gives you an idea there.
Yeah, actually, in a previous developer movement camp that you did in the phone camp,
yes,
earlier 2013, you actually were talking about some of the statistics that you had about what makes or how much more successful apps are when they have trials versus when
I got
they don't.
That in this one,
cool,
too.
Cool. So, yeah, okay, so I'm not going to ruin the surprise.
Yeah, right.
I'm not going to ruin it.
So, the universe
chapter
is...
Five.
Yeah, chapter five, the universe's grand design. So, this is where we talk about application design. Invest in a designer for your app.
Period.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah.
Period.
It's that simple. Yeah. Now, this is why. So I talked about health pack games. And what was interesting was, as I mentioned, this guy, he'd be the first one to admit, he says, you know, I'm not an artist, so I don't build, you know, assets for games and things like that. So the game assets that you see, like those little monsters and the backdrops and all that kind of stuff, I don't actually, you know, draw those. So he realized early on, even with Broken Wing, that if you wanted to be successful, you have to have something with quality. So what he did was he decided to pay a designer, you know, whatever, $5,000. You know, freelance designer, bring him in for 2 to 3 weeks, or, you know, just to build some, you know, assets, some art for the actual game. What he's saying is that, and there's no way to sort of define whether or not he was right, but he's probably at least, again, using that word directionally correct, is five times the amount of revenue that he would have got otherwise because he brought in a designer to actually build the quality from a design perspective, right? So in this case, the design is artwork. So, you know, he spent $5,000 and in revenue, he probably got around $25,000 in that first year alone from the fact that he brought in that art. So that's good. But designers, and I don't know if there's any designers here today watching, but designers are not just artwork. And in fact, that's a very small component of what a designer is. Certain, when we're talking about software, interaction design is really, really important as well. And what's interesting here is that an interactive designer helps you determine the flow of the application. So if you got skills in that area, that's great, because it means that you have an understanding of, you know, user behavior and how, you know, what draws a user to a certain button or things like that, and how you can sort of harness that sort of focus on certain parts of the screen and how a user will interact with various different controls on the screens. That's good, right? So there's another application. Now, I don't know if Sebastian is online today. Is he?
I haven't seen him actually online. But I was actually going to mention that one is actually a really good example of, and I have it actually here up on the screen where you can see, let me give you a full look at that particular page. Oh, of course, naturally, that's when a thing has to come up. That's fine. We'll get rid of that. Anyway, so you see here with DualShot, it's actually one of the most gorgeous applications I think I've seen on the platform recently. And the beauty of it is that it's actually a relatively simple interface.
Yep.
But when I was talking to Sebastian about it, he said to me, he's like, you cannot believe what a difference it was when he was just kind of playing around with it. And Sebastian, of course, is the developer.
Yeah.
And he was playing around with it in the development environment. And, you know, things were good.
Yeah.
But then when his designer, Vincent, came on board and then totally switched things up, like the app almost took on a completely different persona.
Yeah.
And actually, if you go on to, and I'll post it on the chat there, he did a really good blog post afterwards in terms of how important it is before you push your app out there to get user feedback in terms of all of these design elements and, you know, to your point about interaction design, you know, but without going through that process of, you know, removing the developer, bringing in the designer, bringing in the interactions, and then subsequently bringing in the people, you would have never actually figured all that out. And this app has been downloaded some really, really crazy times.
I think it got 10,000 downloads within 24 hours.
Yeah, it was just, and I mean, if you haven't downloaded it, play around with it. It's actually kind of fun to play with, but drives that message home that developers, no offense, like, we're good at what we do, and I happen to consider myself on that side of the
same
spectrum.
Here.
You know, I know you do the same, but we need those designers to really do that. And last but not least, on the design, coming up also available on demand shortly, and by shortly, probably within the next week or so, you'll actually see Tommy Lewis actually did a developer dojo with Arturo Toledo and Alejandro Toledo on purely just the app design and why it's so important and so on and so forth. So make sure to stay tuned to either at Wood Studio on Twitter or at CDN Devs on Twitter so that you can know as soon as that's available online. All of the stuff that Paul is talking about in terms of the investment, they actually go through in terms of what is important in terms of design and what isn't. So
yeah, totally. Great. So the other thing I want to talk about is understanding the platform you're targeting. So again, we're talking about the fact that, you know, you're targeting Windows Phone or you're targeting iOS for iPhone, for example, or whatever, right? When you're designing your application, this is really important. So be very, very mindful of this when you're actually building your application. And this is true even between Windows Phone and Windows 8, for example, because although they look similar, they're not the same application flow and everything. Your application will probably be more successful or most successful when the application itself feels like it was always part of the platform, always part of the operating system. When a user turns on or opens up an application that you built and it feels like it or it looks like it's, you know, just part of the operating system, it just reinforces even subliminally within the user's mind that, you know, you're actually using an application that just belongs there. And that really is an important component to this. And a good example is, well, somewhat good example, is what the quickest one I could find was, on the left-hand side, you see Cocktail Flow, which is an amazingly designed app. It's an amazing designed app for Windows Phone. They've since brought it over to Android and iOS as well. And the application looks different on each one of those platforms because they are using the motifs appropriate for those different platforms. What you're seeing on the right-hand side is an application which will remain nameless. And this is a really blatant example, but trying to make a Windows Phone app look like iOS on the phone, on Windows Phone, right? So, yeah, I would not do that. Not because I dislike iOS. I actually do like iOS. It's a fantastic operating system. But what it doesn't do, what's not appropriate is it doesn't belong on the Windows Phone because it's a totally different design set. Likewise, it would be the same with Android. And if you were building an Android app and you made it look like an iPhone app, or an Android app that looked like an iPhone app for Android, doesn't make any sense, right? So be mindful of this. It's really, really important because if you don't do this, you're going to run into problems. In fact, and again, this is a major, major Canadian brand that will remain nameless, had an iOS app that they loved with good reason. It was actually a well-designed application for iOS, iPhone and iPad. They decided to move it to Windows Phone, and they made it look exactly like and feel and flow exactly like their iPhone app. And you would not believe the poor ratings it got because people were saying it doesn't belong on the platform. So just because you're using a motif that's popular on one platform doesn't mean necessarily it's going to translate into the right sort of behavior or the right emotional connection with the user on your platform. And in fact, in this case, it was the exact opposite, to the point where they actually pulled the app, rebuilt the user interface to make it look more like it belonged on Windows Phone. In fact, completely looked like it belonged on Windows Phone, and then since brought it back out, and much better now. So, again, I can't tell you the name of it because I don't want to dislag the team that built it, but it was absolutely a very, very poorly designed application for Windows Phone for the reason that they decided that they thought that users would like the iOS experience, and that clearly wasn't the case. And it wasn't just a question of buttons, you know, and using skeuomorphism and all that kind of stuff. It was actually the flow. Like, it didn't seem to flow properly because it didn't use the right sort of controls. It didn't use a pivot where instead it used just a simple list box and everything else like that. It was just bad. It just wasn't really well thought out. So be mindful of that. All right, the secret's out.
Here we go. Here comes the secret.
Well, we
the
sort of
true magic sauce of everything that's been going on.
Well, it's funny because we already sort of talked a little bit about this. The secret we sort of gave away in the previous session, in a way. If you're building an app, you're building a business, right?
Just in case you missed the first section,
exactly.
Or actually, if you're watching this on demand and you happen to not have watched part one,
yeah.
Or I should say volume one, since Paul decided to switch things up on me.
Yes.
Then we're going to repeat it again because it's actually just that important.
Yes. Exactly.
Yes.
So, if you're building a business, what are you doing?
Here we go.
Right?
This is the part where you interact and you say the answer. Feel free to type in now.
Well, let's talk about marketing plan in a second. I got something in my eye here.
It's okay. I put up the screen again because this is one of those things where, like Rob suggested before, there should be like a take a screenshot, put it on your wallpaper,
take a
screenshot, print it out. It's just that fundamental.
Yes. So when you're building a business, chances are you're actually paying attention to how well it's doing, right?
Ideally.
Yeah. You're spending the time necessary to be successful because you are invested in it. Your application is no different, right? You should put an investment into your application. Now, I'm not saying you have to quit your day job. That's not at all what I'm saying. What I'm saying is that there should be a proportional amount of investment of your time and effort into actually making sure that your application is kept up properly, that you know you built it nicely, that you're doing the outreach and marketing necessary to actually drive people to your application, as to what you actually did to build the application itself. It's really, really important. Because if you don't, chances are you're not going to get the return on investment that you were hoping for. Now, that return on investment may be in dollars, maybe it's in notoriety, whatever it is, right? Whatever your goals are, it doesn't matter if you want people to pay for your app or not. Just put the effort in. As a business owner, you know, if anybody here owns their own business, you probably already know how hard you have to work to keep it up and to be successful. This is no different in a lot of ways. And unfortunately, it's a hard lesson to learn in some cases, right? People just think that they're going to build an application and then it's all going to be rosy and that they can, you know, pay for their mortgage in the next year just because they built a task list app. Probably not, right? So you have to pay attention to doing the right things and investing back into the company or into your business, you know, spending the time to actually build out your application and do the proper things around updates and everything else like that, which we'll talk about a little bit later as well. It's very, very important. So how do you do this? Marketing plan, really, really important. So depending on what you are trying to do with your application, maybe you need a formal one, maybe you don't need a formal one, but at least you should be thinking about it, at least in your head. Writing things down always makes things a little bit more crystallized for me. I would suggest you probably do something similar for yourself as well. So a typical marketing plan for any business, and this is true not just for apps, but for anything that you want to do that you're actually trying to create a product, right? Whatever that product is, or service for that matter, is first, goals, right? How do you define success for your business? Like, what are you doing, or like, what are you defining, and how are you measuring yourself against your activities to see if you're doing right or wrong, or if you need to focus on things? Very important to understand what your goals are. And part of those goals is understanding what your focus is. Like, what is your app awesome at, right? It's awesome at this and this and this. Okay, well, it's good at those types of things. How am I going to achieve the fact that users will believe me when I say that? You're going to do that by defining your goals, metrics, right? Profit and loss analysis. Now, this may or may not be applicable depending on what you're trying to do. If you're investing a lot of money into your application or game, this might be something that's a little bit more important to you than if it's something that you're doing just as a hobby, right? Again, this is no different than any other business. It's right. What are your sunk costs? Like, do you have to pay for, you know, a computer? Do you have to pay for licenses of developer tools potentially? We do offer free developer tools on Visual Studio, but guess what? If you pay for Visual Studio with one of the other paid SKUs, you get a whole lot more that's well worth it. You know, everything from, you know, master source control with TFS for more than five people if you have a team of larger than five, to, you know, testing suites, to, you know, the ability to create build deploys and stuff like that, all stuff like that. But beyond that, you know, maybe you have to worry about, do you have to pay for a room to actually do this stuff, right? So are you co-locating somewhere, or are you buying a business office to do this type of stuff? Even if you're staying at home, you know, are there any sort of costs around electricity, extra electricity that you might be using for these types of things? Services that you might be consuming, internet, all those types of things are costs that you have to take into account. So depending on what you're saying, right, you know, like maybe profit doesn't mean that you're actually making money. Maybe it means that you're getting something that you're looking for from your goals. But, you know, money's typically the one that is easiest to understand from a profit loss perspective. Are you breaking even, right? And if not, when are you going to break even? Is it worth continuing to do? That's another thing that you have to make sure that you're trying to keep in mind. A pricing strategy. We're going to talk a little bit more about this, but this is really interesting because it's never set in stone. And this is the interesting thing, right? You got this idea and you're productizing it, meaning you're coding it, you're testing it, you're going to deliver it to a store. How much are you going to charge for it? Is it going to be free? Is it going to be freemium, for example, where the app is free and then you pay for stuff in the app, or maybe it's ads or something like that? Or are you getting users to pay for your application, in which case, are you building a trial in? And I suggest you do, and Jonathan sort of alluded to this. We'll talk about this in a bit. So I'm not going to talk too much more about that at this point because we'll get into it. Audience. So you have this great app idea. We've got the mantra down pat, and we have this, you know, amazing sort of implementation. And you know who your competitors are. Who is the typical person that you're trying to reach? So a good example of this is, and this sort of fits in line with pricing strategy, so I'll get back to that as well for just a second between the two things, right? Say, for example, you're building an application that is for students. Maybe it's a class note sharing program, for lack of a better example, right? So maybe there's something where, you know, you're in college or university and you know, you can share in class notes or, you know, archive notes for previous years and things like that. And maybe you charge for those notes within the application. Maybe it's a marketplace in of itself. If you charge for that app at, like, say, $50, you're probably not going to get a lot of people there because you're pricing your application outside of your market. Your market is students. Students typically do not have a lot of money. But On the flip side, if you're actually building an application that's doing medical imaging, right? Very sophisticated things potentially, or maybe not so sophisticated. Maybe it's just, you know, something that, you know, you just know the area very well and it was easy to implement, but, you know, adds a lot of value to a doctor's office, say, for example, a family practitioner. The cool thing is about this is that you have the opportunity to actually charge a whole lot more. So maybe charging that $50 for that app maybe actually is warranted, because the buying or purchasing power of that application, of your user base, is that much more. And we'll get into this as well. If you price it too low, maybe there's a perception that maybe the application isn't worth the money that you're paying for. So it's kind of getting into the heads of your user base as well. So we talked about competitive research, so I won't get too much more into that, but it's basically, who are your competitors? How are you addressing your competitors? How are you evolving your application and everything like that to drive, you know, the right behaviors of your user base to actually download your app and keep them on your app instead of going to a competitive app? And then finally, the last thing, which is kind of interesting because it's the typical thing people think about when they think marketing plan, is messaging, right? How am I going to broadcast to everybody that I know that they know that this is an awesome app? Like, you know, am I buying ad space on Google or on MSN or whatever it is that you're doing? Am I, you know, doing ads on Facebook? Am I doing television ads or radio ads? I mean, I've seen that too, right? It's definitely in there.
If you have the budget for that, of course.
Well, you know, it's funny. Some people make a bet on that, and sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't, right?
Sure.
So, there's lots of ways to market and get the message out from that perspective. Maybe you do some co-marketing with, for example, great partners like Microsoft, right?
First truly, we can take good care of you.
Exactly, right? So, you know, get to know your local Microsoft reps. I guarantee you, we are much more approachable than any of our competitors. I will tell you that right now.
Especially considering I keep putting in the chat, hey, you know, follow up with this and follow up with that, and you have all of our Twitter information. And for those of you guys that are watching this or will be watching this on demand anyway, you're going to have that right at the beginning as well. So reach out to us. We're happy to help. And if we can't help, we'll find you the right people who can. But especially when it comes to app marketing, we can help. We can't guarantee, but we can help.
Yeah, exactly, right? So, I mean, how are you getting the message out? If you get to know Jonathan or myself or somebody else, you know, like, and you have a great app and you feel that it's a great app, maybe we can get a spotlight on our stores. Maybe. No guararantees, but, you know, you never know.
It's always worth a try.
Yeah, exactly.
As part of your marketing plan, you should have a line item. Try telling Paul and Jonathan how good my app is, and you never know.
Exactly.
And if we don't think it's that good, then we'll tell you why, and then we can actually work together and help you. And not suggesting that you guys are creating crappy apps, but in the event that it could be even better.
Exactly.
Right?
And there's so many other ways. So many other ways. And some of them we'll talk about. Like, how are you using online to your advantage?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You know,
especially online. The social networks, like crazy. And don't forget, you didn't mention this one. Your people network is the easiest way to get things out. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, it constantly boggles my mind how it is that you know, people don't necessarily think about their actual users as also being part of their marketing plan.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? You kind of just assume that once your app gets into the person's hands, your relationship is done. But the truth of the matter is that once you get the app into their hands, your relationship is just beginning. Right? So feel free to use them for, you know, to promote the app yourself. One quick point that you mentioned, Paul, on knowing your audience, and then also tying into the messaging. Keep in mind, especially if you're making the kids apps, like, hello, pay attention, number one, for A, pricing. You know, for those of you guys out there that are parents yourself, that is obviously going to pay, or that was an interesting pun, play. An interesting factor in making that decision to purchase or not purchase an app. So that's number one.
For sure.
Number two, also in the descriptions and especially in the screenshots. So I don't know if you guys do this or if you do it with your son. Paul and I have sons that are actually relatively the same age.
Yeah.
Paul's is just a little bit older. But my son grabs my phone and, you know, thankfully he waits for me to come in. But we go into the store together and he looks at the apps. Now, of course, he doesn't know how to read. And certainly, I'm not going to sit there reading them all of the descriptions. But it actually boggles my mind how, and I think you're going to talk about this later, but icons.
Yeah, we're talking about that
for
sure.
Screenshots.
Yeah.
Right? It's almost like, think about, what if your user actually can't read any of your marketing?
Yeah.
Exactly. And by read, I mean like text, right? Mm-hmm. So keep that in mind.
Yeah, for sure.
As part of your marketing plan, not as part of your actual execution. Because
exactly.
I always see that as the opposite, where it's like, so I have my marketing plan, everything is good to go. I have, you know, all my line items and my to-dos in terms of putting together all of this rich app promotion assets and stuff like that, and then they're all text.
Yeah.
You know, so that's great if that's your audience, but just make sure that you know your audience and make sure that you definitely know how you want to land that message.
Yeah, and I'll be honest with you, when you're talking about marketing messaging, I don't know anybody that wants an essay as a marketing thing.
Right.
Yes. Nobody wants to read. Just show me quickly. Elevator pitch. Think of that. So here's a good example. This is a game called Dragon's Blade that I love this game. They built a Facebook page. And this Facebook page, as you can see, they got around 5,000 people, which isn't a lot of people. But the engagement that the users have amongst each other on this Facebook page, and the fact that Nathan, the actual developer out of the U.S., he's on here too, and he's interacting with the users. So he's actually doing some marketing that way as well, by sort of showing that I know you're my users and you're important to me, so I interact with you. He keeps them up to date with updates and everything else like that. Say, hey guys, guess what? Version 3.7.4 is coming out in the next few months. I'm looking for beta testers. Sign up here if you want, right? So it's beyond just a typical marketing message, and it's more making your users feel like they're included in the process, and I think that's really, really important. Another good example is making use of an online website, right? Again, it kind of no-brainer in a lot of ways. And you showed DualShot has their own website. It's a beautiful website, right? It draws users in. It's good. And then we joked a little bit about SEO in the previous session, right? Talking about nobody does that anymore. Well, guess what? Search engines exist and they still search things. So that's something that's very, very important. So if you're looking for something in the case of DualShot, maybe you're looking for front and back facing camera apps. Well, guess what? DualShot will come up in a search very, very quickly on that because of the fact that that's what it does. So building a great user experience for or landing site for your application is actually a very, very good thing because of the fact that it's extra advertising, doesn't probably cost you that much in the first place. We have a free service called Azure Websites that allows you to put up a website really, really quickly using WordPress or any other type of thing or your own custom thing. If you want a custom domain for that so that it says myapp.com or whatever it is that your domain is that you can get, it costs a little bit of money for that, but it's still dirt, dirt cheap. So, it's commoditized now, and it's really worth it because if you build a great application website, it certainly helps because you can put that on your business card, for example, if that's what you want to do is create business cards for it. Because typically, people aren't going to put a website URL to the Windows Phone Store or the Apple App Store for their application. It's better to put a website. It shows more professional sort of attitude towards your application. And it actually presents the user with this, with something that says, this app developer is actually invested in the success of this app as well. It's a subliminal thing. It's a back of the mind type of thing. And it goes a long way into making sure that, that's working for the users, and that if they make an investment in time and money potentially within your application, that they'll get the return on investment themselves. Here's another good example. It's a little bit more text heavy, mint.com. So Mint actually came to Windows Phone and Windows 8 yesterday, actually, which is great. It's a great financial keeping app.
I actually just quite literally downloaded it this morning. Almost like I knew you were going to talk about it.
Yeah, there you go. That's funny. So I made these slides well before actually the Mint came to our platform, but it just shows you, right? So it's an effective website because it gives you all the free features. So like you don't have to put all the features necessarily within the app's landing page on the Windows Phone Store, for example, or App Store or whatever it is that you're looking at. you can provide all that information here, which is great because it allows you to create, you know, a great engagement with the user. It's very professional. They get to know right away what they're getting into by just taking a look at this. And then obviously they have a direct link to the actual app store to actually download the application as well. Oh, what's this? What is
Secret
this?
Secret time. Here
Let's
we
see.
Go. Here comes the Zoom.
I wonder what this is. Yeah.
Shh, it's a secret.
It's
Stay
a secret.
Tuned.
It's got a lot of lorem ipsum and all sorts of stuff like that.
For the record, actually, I'm going to keep this on the screen for a second. But yes. For the record, you guys, since you are live right now with us, you are seeing this first, actually, right? No,
yes.
No one's actually ever seen this before.
Nobody's seen this.
So there you go, the perks of seeing things live, because we may or may not keep this in the on-demand video just for fun.
Yes. But it'll stay in the on-demand video, but that's okay.
I just wanted to say that.
I'm
okay?
just going to give
could
you...
just let me just say that.
Yes.
So that everybody that's online can pat themselves on the back and say, yes, this is why I come live.
Yes.
But for you guys that are, in fact, watching live, thank you.
So just a hint, if you build an app for Windows Phone or Windows 8 and you enter the code Quando...
Wait. Brace yourself. Hold on.
Maybe,
hold on.
Maybe you might get this template to use. I don't know. We'll see.
So. That's it? That's awesome, actually. Yeah.
So.
Stay tuned. Make sure you follow the hashtag at... It's funny, actually, because the hashtag doesn't have an at. But
it's hashtag devmove.
Devmove. But without the E.
Yeah,
so
devmov, yes.
I guess. Because,
yes.
You know, Twitter's all about keeping the characters to a minimum. So the E is actually relatively useless. So we just decided to chop it off.
Yeah.
Why not?
Absolutely. All right. Chapter 7. I'm going to steal a line from Austin Powers. Allow myself to introduce myself. Quick question. Maybe people on chat can sort of... answer this. What do you think is the very first interaction your app will have with the average user?
Right. Let's pause for reflection. Okay, that's enough now.
Okay. Do we have anything here?
Not yet.
No. Nope.
You have to remember, though, they're a couple of seconds behind us.
Oh, they are. That's right. Okay.
Magic of live.
Yes. Okay. So the answer to this, the average user will see your app for the first time on, it's not a trick question, on the app marketplace, right? So, what does this mean? It means that you have to have an amazing experience for the application for the user to look at before he or she even downloads that application, okay? So, let's talk about when you're submitting your application for certification to whatever app store that you're talking about, there's a few things you need to think about to be effective and to drive the right, you know, first impression. You know, the saying is, you'll never get a second chance to make a first impression. Absolutely true here too, right? You want to make sure that you're doing a few things right to make sure that you drive home the right emotional connection. Again, getting back to that word or phrase with the user. So the first thing is the application's icon or tile, which you sort of alluded to, right? The icon or tile will be basically the way you associate the application on your phone or your tablet. And it's actually probably the first thing that you'll see on the actual page or landing page of your application in the store because your eyes will be drawn to it. So things you need to think about. The image associated with that application. What is the right set of imagery or iconography, whatever you want to call it, right, that will be associated with your application so that that link, emotional and psychological link between the user and the application on the mobile device will actually be made, right? A beautiful tile or a beautiful icon is an amazingly powerful thing that allows you to build some amazing cool things with it. Choice of color, right? Are you using subdued colors? Are you using very, very loud and bright colors? There's good examples why you would want to use both each of those in different sort of scenarios. So think about that as well. Are you going to make use of the application or the mobile device's theme color in the case of Windows Phone and Windows 8? Maybe that's the way you want to go as well. And then finally, your icon. What message does it convey, right? Is it professional, or is it funny, or is it irreverent, or is it serious? You know, all those types of things you have to keep in mind as well for your application because of the fact that the icon is really, really important at being that first sort of portal to it. So let's take a look at some examples. So here's some great examples of application tiles and icons. So the first one, we talked about DualShot already, right, Jonathan? So this is a great icon or tile, I should say, and it's got the icon, as you can see there, a camera with a line in the middle of a square. Now that's great because it actually, it tells the story of the application. It's a camera, so you're taking photos, and you get the photo from the front-facing camera and the back-facing camera on a single photo. Pretty simple, but it's effective. It's artful, and it actually does a really good job at driving home an amazing, amazing sort of, you know, association between the application and the art itself. The second one is the nightstand clock, and I took this one specifically from Windows 8. Now, it's also existing on other platforms as well, so I'm not saying that this is unique to Windows Phone or anything, but the interesting thing around this one is that you notice, like the DualShot, it doesn't have any sort of naming for the application on the actual tile. It doesn't say nightstand clock, but you can tell by the iconography that it kind of is, it's an alarm clock of sorts, right? Beautiful. I love it because it's effective, it's clean, it's crisp, and it's actually providing the right sort of information. The one thing I might change on this is what's interesting. I'm not sure why they decided to pick up the color green for it. I would have actually picked a black tile and then have red colors because that's typically what you see on an alarm clock, you know, just providing that sort of connection to something physical, which is a bit of skeuomorphism even on Windows 8 and Windows Phone. On iOS, there's an app called Drug Hub, and it's basically an app that allows you to keep track of the pills that you need to take, your medication, and it's sort of a calendar app or whatever you want to call it around that. So very, very useful. And the iconography is an image of a pill. It's very simple to understand. This is a pill, and it's in a box, right? So it sort of tells you right away that, okay, well, this is maybe, you know, my application that'll tell me when I need to take certain medications or whatever, things like that. It's beautiful, it's crisp. Again, no naming, which is really, really interesting. I'm a big fan of picking an icon that doesn't require you to have the name of the app on it. That's just my own personal opinion. And then the last one is something that's on I found on the Google Play Store, and that's Rabbids Big Bang. Now, this, I guess you can sort of say, I'm guessing it's a game, right? You know, because not very many apps would have something like that. Looks like it's a rabbit in a spacesuit. So obviously it's a space adventure with a rabbit as a hero. Yeah, okay, makes sense. But if I take a look at it, this is a goofy looking picture and it draws you in just because it's very comical, right? So it's like, oh, okay, this looks kind of cool. It's very professional. Maybe I'll try out the application or the game in this case, right? So that's a good example. Now, things to think about with your app submission again, your app's description. So time and time again, I see this on the Windows Phone Store all the time, and I'm seeing it on Windows as well as on Apple App Store and Google Play. People do not pay attention to this, and it irks me because this is really, really important. Because when a user sees an application in the store, you know, the icon or tile will probably draw them in to get more information, but then they're going to read, they might read reviews, and obviously good reviews are obviously important, but they're going to read the description of your application. And people get this wrong more often than not, unfortunately. It's really, really unfortunate. So let's take a look at this, right? So what are you going to do within this description? Well, the description is a way for you to pitch your app. Why should people care? And again, this gets back to this whole, what makes your app awesome? What is your app awesome at? If you cannot make this into a sentence or two, that's a problem because basically you don't understand the value of your app yourself and you can't convey that message properly to the user. Again, remember, your user does not have a lot of time or the attention span to actually read through a novel. So think about that. Which brings me to the second point, which is the length of the description. You don't want a description to be too short that it's useless. But you also don't want it to be too long that the user is not going to read all the way down to the bottom. So be aware of that because that's very, very important. And also, in the length of the description, I know a lot of people like to put release notes in the description. That's perfectly cool by me. Just don't put the release notes at the top and make me have to look all the way down to find the actual description of the app. A lot of people do that. I think it's the wrong way to go, personally. And then the final part is the thing that just kills me. Oh, it just bothers me beyond belief, is grammar and spelling. right? Pay attention. There are, you know, things you can use to check the spelling and the grammar of your description prior to actually submitting it into the store. Reread it 5-10 times to make sure everything's right, because there's nothing in my mind, and I think I'm not alone on this, that tells me that an application developer really doesn't care about the app if he or she has spelt some things wrong in the description. There's no excuse for it. Use proper tense in the sentences. You know, use proper sentence structure and everything else of that nature. Then we'll be good. So I want to show you some poor examples of app descriptions before we actually go forward. In some cases, or in all these cases, I'm not actually providing you with the names of these apps because I don't want them to be shamed out, but you can sort of see here. Here's an example, first of all, of the first one on the left, the big one. Now, you can see here, we have a whole bunch of things here, right? So we have new features and bug fixes. This gets back to the point of me saying, don't put your new release notes right at the top. I want to find out what the heck this app is all about first, right? So as you can see down here, this app aims to provide a unified platform and an interface to call people and places. I don't even know what that means, first of all, but whatever. So that's something that I think you need to think about when you actually do this. But the other thing that you need to think about is at least put that description at the very top so that they understand exactly what the app does before you get to the feature set or the release notes. Again, it bugs me when you see that because it's really, really difficult to get by it. The second one, top right-hand corner, is a client app for this service called WeHeartIt.com. Okay. The description is basically saying it's a client for Windows Phone 8 for WeHeartIt.com. Okay, well, what does it do, right? Okay, it gives you some release notes, and literally this is all the description was release notes with a one-sentence description. Being short and succinct is a good thing, but not to the point where you're basically leaving out a lot of information. This is really poor planning on the part of the app developer, I think, to drive home the right value messaging for the application. As a prospective user, I see this and I say it's not worth my time. If the app developer can't even figure out exactly what to do, then why should I care about it too? So, and then finally, the last one is somebody decided to create a book app for the Iliad, and he called it the book name and the book author, and that's it. Okay, well, I kind of know what the Iliad's all about. Yeah, it's a classic from the Greek, from Greece, you know, ancient Greece, and it's all about, you know, the adventures of a hero. But I don't know anything beyond that, right? It wouldn't kill you to actually put a description in for the actual app. So very, very sad state of affairs with each of these three, unfortunately. But here, let's take a look at some good examples. And there's varying different examples of this. So for example, on the left, we have Onomatop, which is based on the app built by a Montreal-based developer. And what's great about it is it tells you right away what the app is, you know, doing great things and what it's all about. And it also gives you a step-by-step sort of thing that it actually does, right? So it's crystallizing it in a great way. And then they get into features. So that's a great thing, right? So they didn't get into the features right away. They actually had a description of the application and then went step-by-step into features. So I love it. Square Peg on the top right-hand corner is by Fusionware out of Vancouver. And basically, it's shortened to the point. It's a game that basically is all about hand-eye coordination, right? So you can take a look at this and yeah, it's great. I know right away very, very quickly what this app is all about. I didn't need a lot of text to actually get there. This is a good example of where a succinct message actually makes sense. And then the third one, bottom right-hand corner, is Stylist, and that's by I can't remember if he's in Montreal or if he's in Toronto, but it's a great app that sort of lets you determine different hairstyles on your picture so that if you wanted the Bieber cut, you could do that if you want, I guess, or if that's your thing. But the great thing is here, you can see it tells you right away in a very succinct paragraph as to what the application does, and then it provides you with key features afterwards. So this developer, Dinesh, has done a really good job at sort of figuring out exactly what's important to a user to know for the application before he or she decides to download it, and then boom, you know, all the features are there to really seal the deal. So that's a great example there. Then finally, the last thing I want to talk about on this one, I think it's the last thing, is the screenshots. People don't really think about this, right? They built the app and they have an idea as to what types of screenshots are really great for an application and everything. That's good, right? But they really don't think about it hard enough to really make it the most effective use of their time to actually submit the right screenshots. So what are the things that you need to think about? Highlight the strengths, you know, the visuals, if that's the case, or, you know, the feature functionality of the application. It should be representative of your application, some of these screenshots. The other thing is, how many screenshots? Too little or too many? Right in the middle. You want to be right in the middle, right? Because if you put too many, users probably will not scroll through them. And chances are you're just, you know, whitewashing things and trying to just paint a huge brush and try to get every single feature of your application into a screenshot. Set of screenshots, not worth it, right? The user wants 3 or 4 different screenshots, I would say, on average, that really sort of bring home the message of what this application is all about. And then finally, what you think is awesome in the app isn't necessarily what other users will think is awesome in the app. Do some beta testing with your users. Find out what features are most important to them and really sort of focus on that as being part of your screenshots. Because again, you're so close to the app, what you think is awesome might be something that isn't really all that cool to a lot of the users that'll be using the app. Well, as a feature that you didn't think much about, it might be the most important or favorite feature that users use, so you might want to highlight that. So just keep that in mind too. So here's some poor examples of screenshots. And again, I've whitewashed out the names of some of them because I just didn't want to really sort of get people embarrassed or anything. The first one is the splash screen screenshot. I hate when people do this. It's a waste, right? I don't care what your splash screen looks like. I'll figure it out when I actually download the application.
And more importantly, these days with the devices being as fast as they are, you may or may not even see.
That's a very good point. I never even thought of
that. Splash screen. So, you know, you only have a certain number of screenshots that you can upload, correct?
Yeah.
Remind me, what's the
number? I think
it's
8 in Windows Phone and Windows 8, but it's probably similar across the other ones as well.
Yeah, so I mean, like, don't take up the space of one of those for something that you see maybe a split second better. If you want to show me, you want to show me some sort of system feature or something like that, show me a screenshot with a live tile.
Yeah.
Right? That's especially, like, I actually, and as you can tell, this is a rather passionate topic of mine because I honestly, and you guys probably do this too, and you probably do it, I make the decision of which app I use based on the screenshots that I see. To be honest, I'm not discounting the fact that, you know, descriptions are important and all that kind of stuff, but whoa, too many words. Yep. And actually, most of them have too many words. So actually, it goes back to the original exercise that we were doing. Maybe you should take that 15 seconds or less, put that in words, and make that your description.
Yep.
But the truth of the matter is, I hope I'm not the only one, I will make a decision based on the screenshots.
Yeah.
Right? Because that's going to tell me how I'm going to enjoy my app. And you know what? Even if your app is awesome at what it does, if it's ugly, I'm not using it. It's just that simple.
Yeah.
Goes back to the point of invest in a designer.
Yeah.
But things like live tiles show off the, I guess you can say, the features and the goodness of what's native to the platform.
Yeah, we call it the light up features, and you know, it's true of any platform. They have specific, unique features to their platform that is awesome, right? So yeah, really, really cater to that. That's a good point.
We do have a great question on the chat.
Yes. Should
we always post the max number?
No, I would say no.
Again, the most relevant, no.
The answer is yes. You know, whatever you feel you need, but be brutally honest as to what value 8. Or more sort of screenshots potentially that could bring to the user that they couldn't see in 4,
right,
for example, is what I would say.
Right. The answer to the screenshot with the live tile, yeah, so for me, it's the live tile itself, not as in as what it would look like to me on the home screen. So obviously not just the tile itself.
Yeah.
But if you are building for, which I hope by this point you're building for Windows Phone 8, make sure that you're also showing me the wide tile, the small tile, all that kind of stuff. Now, I don't necessarily know if you want to do that in separate screenshots, but keep in mind with the ability for everybody to customize their screen based on what they like and what they like to do, what your title shows for different things might actually be relevant. But goes back to your point of that's sort of what is it, why it's important to actually have those screenshots, because ultimately you're going to decide based on per app what is relevant to make the decision to download and try your app.
Yep.
I guess that's the best advice I can give. Like, it's not one rule or the other.
Yeah, I agree. You know, there is no hard and fast rule around any of this. It's really more of, you'll know if you do the right assessment of, you know, what's good and bad about your screenshots, you'll sort of find out what the right answer is for that specific app, and it's not right. The same for each app. But I would say around 4 is probably appropriate, 4 to 5.
Yeah. Or what's relevant at the end of the day.
Exactly, right. Just to go over some of these other ones quickly, the second one, basically the app developer decided to put their help screen on there. There's no value in that. It's a lot of text. Nobody's going to read through that, and it doesn't showcase anything, so I would leave that out. The third one is basically a static list of features. Well, you know, yeah, you could put that in a screenshot, and maybe I could say, okay, well, maybe. There's not a whole lot of value in that. You know, your feature set that you talk about, or, you know, in your description about what you can do with the app, should be able to cover this stuff well enough that you don't need this extra screenshot. And then the fourth one is just plain ugly. I mean, it's way too busy for anything. Maybe the app is awesome, but I see that and I think to myself, it's going to take me a while to figure out how to use this app, so forget it, I'm not going to use it. So keep that in mind as well. Now here's some examples of good screenshots. So we talked a lot about DualShot already. The first screenshot that you see here is a screenshot of DualShot. It gives you a great example of exactly what you're going to get with the application. It's effective, and it shows you all the different sort of features that you can have as well. So to me, this is a beautiful way to sort of explain how, you know, the application works in general. So I think that's beautiful. Second one is the currency app by XE Currency out in Newmarket, Ontario. They're very well known on basically all the mobile platforms. The Windows Phone one, this is a great screenshot because it shows some wow, right? Everybody loves charts. They think they're cool, right? And this one's got great visuals on the charts. It's a beautiful looking chart. You know, it shows off, you know, the minimalist style as far as, like, you know, using, you know, very, very information driven sort of screens and everything. It's very nice to look at, and it draws me in and makes me want to actually download that app. Monster Stack 3HD, which again, we've already talked a lot about. There's another example of what's a great example of in-game play. It looks fun, right? You know, it looks like it's interesting. There's some, you know, monsters that look like they're a little bit scared right there. So obviously something happened, makes you want to think, oh, okay, this is kind of cool. Maybe there's some cool stuff that we can do with it. And then finally, 4 Picks, 1 Song by Denim Software Solutions out of Toronto. It sort of shows you very, very quickly, you know, I think it's fairly easy to figure out what the application does by the title of the app, but this sort of reinforces it as well, right? It's a bit of a guessing game app. Nothing too wild here, but very popular. And it's an excellent game. It's a lot of fun to play. So those are some great examples of screenshots as well. So I guess we'll take a break again.
We are at that point.
Yeah,
love it.
We'll do another 10-minute break or whatever.
Yeah, and you know what? It's actually, I'm watching you guys go back and forth on the chat. It's actually amazing to see, as you've been commenting on the screenshots and whatever, they've actually been sharing app URLs and commenting on each other's screenshots, like, hey, you know, screenshot number one you should keep, screenshot number two you should drop.
Nice.
That's actually really cool.
Yeah.
And maybe if some of you guys actually have various different apps that you want to post up there, maybe Paul and I will take a stab at it while we're on break, just to kind of see, you know, maybe give a little bit of our opinions. I also actually shared in the chat that if you follow at CDN Devs on Twitter, and look for the hashtag app of the day, all one word, obviously. We're actually going to start tweeting out various different apps that have come in through either developer movement or some of the ones that we've come across.
Yeah.
And it would actually be really cool for you guys to tweet back commentary based on some of the things that we've been talking about here. You know, look at the screenshots, look at the descriptions, look at actually download the apps themselves, take a look at the interfaces, whatever. Any kind of feedback you can provide, you know, obviously the app publishers themselves are probably also hopefully following at CDN Devs as well. And hey, let's get the feedback loop going. Why not?
Yeah, I'm totally in on that. And if you want to be the app of the day, ping Jonathan or myself or anybody on our team, and we'll take it under consideration.
And by pay, we take pay in the form of a good drink or dinner or...
No, we
just
don't.
Just kidding.
Yes.
I'm totally just kidding. We do it for the love of the apps.
That's right. And by the way, if you do have an app that you would like on App of the Day and it uses Azure, that makes us even happier because that's a great story to tell. So
it definitely makes me happier, that's for sure.
It makes us all happy. great.
Being the cloud guy myself. So there's actually one more thing.
Yes.
Okay. So when you were talking about all of the different ways to market and so on and so forth, you actually didn't talk about videos at all.
You know what? I didn't talk about it because I knew I was probably going to run over time, but it's a good point, right? So I would lump that in with kind of the web presence in a way, right? And if you noticed when I showed that screenshot of what might be coming on Developer Movement for you,
yep.
There was a definite web side to that. Right. It's important to show gameplay, to show usage of your video or of your application in a video, I think, in a lot of cases. Unless you got a dirt simple application, it never hurts. But I wouldn't make it like a 20-minute video.
No.
I'd make it like a minute-long video showing how to do it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Add some sound to it, whether that's music or commentary.
And just make it fun. Like, think viral.
Yeah.
Right.
Because exactly.
Obviously, especially if someone like me, for example, goes in and takes your app. I happen to like playing with it or whatever. It has a website, has a video, let's say on YouTube or whatever. That can go.
Yep.
I'm gonna share it because I think, hey, this is an awesome app. Go.